Well, as a child, and still 75 years later, I get visual migraines in which one sees dazzling zigzags and sometimes colorful geometric patterns. I'm lucky I never get the headache part after it. So migraine may have been at the start. But over the years, I've seen many other patients with all sorts of conditions, some benign, some not so benign, with hallucinations. I'm very struck by the fact that they often don't mention these spontaneously, and they need to have they need to be delicately interrogated by a physician they trust. And this may then be immensely reassuring to them. Hallucinations carry a bad connotation, I think, in the public eye and the medical eye. They're thought to denote schizophrenia or dementia or something awful happening, whereas the vast majority are benign, and the vast majority of people can be reassured. This is what I do as a physician, and this is partly what I've tried to do in the book.
When you had your hallucinations that came from migraines, you said that you began to see certain visual patterns, and you write about this in the book. You say that one of the commonalities of certain hallucinations are patterns. I was interested if you could then tie this into to art. You say there's possibly a connection between these patterns and the art that's been created over many, many years.
Well, this was just a notion which occurs to me, especially with sort of decorative art and Islamic art and Moorish art, but where wonderful symmetrical patterns and patterns are nested in patterns. And this reminds me, this may look very much like some of the things one sees. And I mean, these patterns don't occur just in migraine. They may occur in fever. They may occur to anyone as they're falling asleep, but before they're asleep. And so I think they're a sort of common human heritage, and maybe they influence people. I mean, they've been an influence in decorative art.
Yeah. What about this issue of religion? You say, for example, Joan of Arc probably suffered from some form of epilepsy. And there's always been this connection between certain levels of hallucinations, whether they're auditory hallucinations or visual hallucinations, and religion.
Yeah, well epilepsy used to be called, the Greeks called it the sacred disease, when people may have a sudden sense of bliss or rapture and feel that they are in heaven or seeing angels or communing with God. And experiences like this may lead to conversion, even if the individual has been not religiously inclined before. Now, as a neurologist, I can say that hallucinations of this sort go with heightened activity in particular parts of the brain. I do not say anything, and I cannot say anything about the value or the significance of such experiences, which is very much an individual matter.
Well, you went through a period of hallucinating through a different means, which was through a period of experimenting with different drugs through your 20s, it sounded like. Can you tell me what you got from those experiences, or what they taught you, again, about the nature of hallucinations?
Well, the very last thing I put in the book was some personal experiences. I didn't know whether I should be open about them or not, but I thought, hell, they're 40 years ago, and also I'm the same as other people, and if I can, you know, the book is full of letters from and descriptions from the inside from other people. I thought I can also speak from the inside, and so really between 63 and 67, I tried all sorts of things. I started with cannabis, with pot. I took LSD and Morning Glory and all sorts of other things. I pushed the envelope, as they say. I think I was lucky to survive. Some of my friends who took overdoses didn't survive. But I think for me, it made me directly aware of some of the possibilities of the mind and the brain in terms of heightened perceptions and heightened consciousness of one sort and another. I think it also made me more open and more sympathetic to things which some of my patients complained of or mentioned. You know, some of my awakenings patients would describe very strange things, as, for example, not seeing continuous motion, but seeing a series of stills, like strobe flashes. I'd had that experience myself, so I could say, yes, I understand it, and it's real, and it doesn't mean anything terrible. I think I probably sort of became somewhat more open as a person and a physician, but I don't know that I had a conversion of any sort, although the last time I took drugs, which was a huge dose of amphetamine in 1967, I spent the experience reading an old book, an 1860s book on migraine, and in my state, the book filled me with ecstasy and interest. But then I thought, this is a century has passed, now it's the 1960s, who will write a book like this now? And I got a very loud inner voice which said, you silly bugger, you're the man. And I was the man, and I never took drugs again. So I think, in a sense, they may have shoehorned me or released me from an inhibition of imagination, which I think I'd had for many years, and got me going. And I've been going ever since, and didn't have recourse to drugs again. Mm. Whether this would have happened anyhow, I suspect it would have happened anyhow, but I think it was just made more dramatic and sudden by a drug experience. Yeah.
Can hallucinations teach us anything? Can they be beneficial in any kind of a way?
Well, I think they can be in various ways. One example, I think, is in bereavement hallucinations, which are especially common if a couple have been happily married for many, many years. And, of course, death leaves a great hole in one's life. Something like a third of bereaved people get visual or auditory hallucinations of the departed person. And these hallucinations can be a great comfort to them, and I think help them through the mourning process. Sometimes I think hallucinations can come to one's aid in extreme or desperate situations. One of the people I describe, a young woman, was about to commit suicide. She was brokenhearted after a love affair. She had sleeping tablets in one hand and a tumbler of whiskey in the other, and she was just about to take them when a voice said, "I wouldn't do that," and added, "You won't always be feeling as you're feeling now." And she put the tablets down, very startled, said, who was that? And she said, a ghostly image of a man in 18th century dress materialized in a chair opposite her and then glimmered and disappeared in a few seconds. But she feels that, she says it was like her guardian angel, but she knows this must have come from some deep part of herself, and she feels this hallucination saved her life. I also had a hallucinatory voice once when and I write about it in my book, A Leg to Stand On. I had broken a leg very badly when I was alone on a mountain and no one knew where I was and was sort of struggling to get down. I splintered the leg after a fashion, and at one point I thought, exhausted, and I thought, why not a little sleep? And a very loud voice said, "No, you can't sleep. You've got to go on. Find a pace you can keep up." And with a voice like that, I think this too was a sort of life voice. So I think hallucinations are not they may be just, as it were, symptoms of something or other, but I think they may also have an important role in one's mental economy and perhaps in culture too, with art and other things.
Can you say more about that? I think it's really interesting, this idea that, do you think hallucinations teach us more about who we are? Is there still a part of us that is, you know, a lot of people talk about the divide between the rational and perhaps the irrational. Is there still a side that is mysterious in terms of where these hallucinations come from, that we still don't quite know yet?
William James, who was a wonderful psychologist and had the strongest of rational consciousness, he describes how once after inhaling nitrous oxide, all sorts of other forms of consciousness came to him, including a sort of mystical consciousness. And I think this may have made him sympathetic to others' descriptions and to have written the varieties of religious experience. And it's extraordinary that every culture in the world has discovered plants with psychoactive drugs, and they've played a part in every culture, usually a religious or ritual part, as they still do in many cultures, like the Native Americans with peyote. I think we are sometimes hungry for other states of mind and other forms of consciousness, and it's true that these can be produced by art and music and beautiful scenery and falling in love, but there's also, for better or worse, a sort of shortcut with drugs.
Are there times that you wish you could push the science away and be swept up in these ideas that you're talking about right now? Because you're probably always looking for a scientific reasoning for all of this.
Yeah. Well, I never want... I do wish to be swept away, but I wish to retain a critical and scientific consciousness at the same time. And I don't think the scientific that science and mysticism or science and religion are necessarily antithetical. I've had my fill of, well, what I might call mystical states of mind when everything seems to be reconciled and beautiful and when one has a great feeling of unity, although I've never had the God feeling and can't imagine what that is like. But I sort of describe myself as an old Jewish atheist. But I'm quite sympathetic to religious or mystical feeling, although I don't think it should sweep one away from all other considerations. I think one needs to hold on to one's rational and critical hat at the same time.